We're going to hand over to our colleagues at the BBC now, primarily Sasha Cedrics, who's the creative director at Future Media, and he's going to talk about a fascinating new scheme, the BBC Playlister. Sasha.
Hello. For some reason, I'm only Mac user, so I get this antiquated remote from the 1950s here, so hopefully it'll all work. As Alex is saying, thank you for inviting me. I'm a creative director for BBC Future Media, specifically within radio and music. And today I just wanted to talk about a nascent service we've launched called BBC Playlister, a bit of an overview about it, and some of the guiding principles that we follow in terms of our music metadata. So there are sort of three key aspects to BBC Playlister. There's the ability to just remember tracks you hear on the BBC. Then secondly, there's this idea of being able to provide online recommendations. Some of those could be algorithmic, but being the BBC, there's also a curatorial aspect, so really trying to leverage our DJs and talent to provide recommendations. And lastly, some ability to replay those tracks in full. So it's a bit cheeky of me. I'm giving a presentation, and I'm going to let a video give a presentation for me. But it's only 2 minutes and change, and I think it's shamelessly promotional, I suppose, but it does give a slightly good overview of the first parts of the service and BBC Music's cultural history, I suppose, as it were. So let me cue that up.
For over 80 years, the BBC has been at the heart and soul of the UK's musical life. We've always been finding the best music we can and playing it to millions of people on the radio, on TV, in live performances, and online. For years, people have used the BBC to help discover, collect, and enjoy the music they love. Now, we're introducing BBC Playlister, to make it even easier to tap into music you love from across the BBC. Have you ever heard music on the BBC, then wondered what it was? Or do you keep forgetting the name of a track or an artist that you want to hear more of? Now, BBC Playlister makes it easier to go from hearing the music you love to finding out what that track is. All it takes is a single click to send the track to your own playlist. Then you'll be able to remember and collect all of the music you love from across the BBC in one place.
So whether you like a particular track from my Radio 1 show last week, or if classical pieces from Radio 3 in tune take your fancy, you'll be able to find and add the tracks you hear to playlists to help you build your own music library.
And soon, if you want to know what the tunes are from BBC TV programmes, with Playlister, you'll be able to discover these tunes and get more of the music you love from across the BBC.
BBC Playlister also links to your existing digital music players, Spotify, YouTube, and Deezer, so you can quickly and easily export your BBC playlist from Playlister to these platforms and listen to the tracks in full. Then add them to your other playlists and share them with your friends.
For example, in Spotify, there'll be a BBC Playlister area so that tracks from the best of the BBC's TV and radio shows are even easier to access. Their music playlists will be available for you to choose from. One of the most exciting things about BBC Playlister is yet to come. Soon you'll be able to follow some of your favourite BBC DJs and presenters, and whenever they add a track to their own personal playlist, you will get an update.
Be inspired by great music. From big hits to cult classics to hidden gems from far-flung places. It's a great way to discover and share music guided by the tastes of the people you trust. And who knows, you may discover a few interesting surprises along the way. And Playlister has a lot more on the horizon. We've got some exciting new features and updates planned, so stay close to hear about what's next.
Yes. Stay close. I mean, since then, as Joe and Zane were talking about there, we actually have launched an area that provides at least a handful of our DJs right now the ability to have personal playlists that they can update at will, some more often than others. And so there's a basic kind of index page area, which features or highlights a couple of those presenters or DJs that we have. And then at the bottom, sort of an extensive list of all of them. Right now, we're only 20 plus DJs involved with this, but we're really hoping to broaden it in the future. And then there's also an area within Playlister, which is essentially a feed of all the tracks that our talent is recommending. Basically, it's a real-time feed, so the latest track's added in. For some reason, we have a lot of Iggy Pop here, but I guess he's actually guesting, taking over Jarvis Cocker's show on Sunday for several months, so it's great to have Iggy on board. And once you decide to actually follow certain presenters, should you wish to, or subscribe to their playlists, you'll then be able to get basically a filtered feed just based on the talent that you respect. So, I mean, in a nutshell, that's the BBC Playlister destination right now. But BBC Playlister is really two things. I mean, it's a destination, but it's also a service, a much broader service than just being on BBC Playlister. So I thought I'd just take a moment to talk about some of those aspects of the service itself. So, you know, within that, it's about, at least on the audience-facing side, a lot of touch points. So the BBC is quite a vast portfolio online, always very challenging to tie all those pieces together, or connect all those dots. That's not my computer, by the way, so we'll just enjoy that. Nice, good to know. So I thought I'd just take you through at least some of those touch points right now. Try not to get too sidetracked. So there's network home pages. Right now we're tied in with more or less the national stations, so it's about 7 right now. It's not too evident on this page right now, but there is a box in the middle that is showing what track is now playing or last played that you can easily at that point add it to your playlist. Naturally, it's also on our mobile app. I kind of think this is a pretty crucial touch point in so far as it's quite easy to whip that thing out, to find out what's playing and to add it, even if you're listening offline, which most people do with the radio. So it's sort of a companion experience. It's a lot more suited to radio than maybe, say, being on a desktop or even your tablet. Additionally, several of the networks have display their playlists for the week. So Radio 6, Music in this case, or Radio 1. These are fairly popular destinations, as is the official chart, UK official chart, which is hosted by Radio 1, but it's not a BBC chart, it's for the UK. And this one gets quite a lot of traffic online for us. It's probably our biggest area for people wanting to find out what's rising or falling in the charts, be it singles, albums, downloads, and the like. And also, every radio program and TV program has an episode page. And within that, we have the track list featured, and from there you can get a 30-second snippet or add it to your playlist. And as I was saying before, there are these kind of canonical views for presenter playlists, which can be housed within their own skin, as it were, for their program pages. There we go. And lastly, there's also music events. So BBC has a music events ecosystem, as it were. It's actually an events ecosystem. Glastonbury just being one of several. There's also the World Bagpipe Championships, if you're interested in that. But for every session that's played, we list the set list. And in many cases, we provide the ability for people to at least remember the commercial variant of that track that's performed, not the live one that's done there. So those are the touch points, the kind of audience-facing areas. Then there's the whole technical architecture where all the magic happens, really. Admittedly, I wasn't sure exactly what kind of audience we were going to have here today. So I thought that I wouldn't really try to get granular on this kind of area, because I kind of feel like a lot of people might feel apologies for the David Cronenberg gore, but might might feel something like that. So if there are any kind of really, you know, things around schema or domain modeling, Nick Humphrey is here as well. He's the technical architect for Radio Music, so happy to deal with any questions around that. But I did want to at least, in the most broadest brushstrokes, kind of talk about, well, in one case, the semantic web, but probably a bit broader than that, just open data and how important a role it kind of plays within BBC. Essentially, the open data is just about trying to provide a common framework that allows information to be shared and reused across applications. So it's essentially just a web of linked data that's structured and understandable. And as you can see here, there's quite a lot of different types of semantic resources to choose from. And this diagram, particular diagram's from like 2008, so it's gotten broader since then. But I just wanted to talk about a couple of particular resources that are fairly important for the BBC. So there's DBpedia. Again, I'm not sure how familiar people are with semantic web and so forth, but DBpedia basically publishes structured data extracted from Wikipedia. So in many ways, if this was proportional, that thing would probably be much bigger. Then there's MusicBrainz, which is kind of like a Wikipedia associated just with music in terms of a database. I'll talk about that a bit more in a moment. And the BBC development community was an early active partner with things around the semantic web, but a lot of the RDF resources that we have, we're kind of decommissioning those, as you might say. But we're going to be coming up with this new thing called BORP. It already exists, BBC Nitro, that provides a lot of information around programming, music, all forms of metadata in the BBC. Right now, it isn't open, but it shall be shortly. And just lastly, there's also FOF, or Friend of a Friend, and essentially, this is just about describing relationships between people and other people or things. And a lot of the things with the BBC that we're trying to do now involve having a profile. So BBC ID uses some of these principles in terms of providing personalization or recommendations. So back to MusicBrainz. I see we have Robert in the audience, which is lovely to see. We've had a partnership with MusicBrainz for many years, and it's been a very important component in organizing our music metadata. And this sort of most common, lowest common denominator is this artist ID. In MusicBrainz here, we have an example here of Kanye West. MusicBrainz basically captures information about artists, their recorded works, and the relationships between them. And the database itself is maintained primarily through an act of love. it's by people that are really passionate about the subject. And so, in a nutshell, MusicBrainz has an artist ID. For Kanye West, it's this non-human readable code. But what you'll notice is by having this singular ID, it doesn't have to involve any disambiguation. Is it Kanye West this or Kanye West that. It's just this ID. Then other services can use this. So the BBC can just tap into that ID to create its own resource page. So how that ends up manifesting itself a bit is like so. So essentially, you know, anything that involves Kanye West within the BBC, if we tag it with that ID, it will be exposed here. So whether it be videos, playout, news, whatever, it can appear here, but more importantly, it can also appear anywhere else because it's structured linked data. So, you know, that's why artist IDs are just so important and why it's vital that everyone in the music industry ensures that these kinds of databases are up to date. So that might be a number of people here. Particularly for newer artists or white label releases that typically, you know, if you got the Rolling Stones, it's going to be in a database, but if you have the Fuck Buttons or something and they just came out, you won't know about them. So being able to have that database up to date is really important when we're trying to promote artists across the interweb. So, you know, artist IDs, it all sounds fairly straightforward. What about track IDs? That must be just as easy. Unfortunately, it really isn't. So, I mean, I'll just try to illustrate this as an example. Let's take a track like Lithium from Nirvana's album, Nevermind. If radio plays out that track, simple enough. You know, you've got an ID for it, and anywhere that appears across the ecosystem, we should be able to track it. Unfortunately, that's not really the case, just because, you know, there are many variations of even this one album. You know, in this case for Nevermind, there's, you know, over 100 of official releases, not to mention the legal ones, and that's around, you know, the different formats, whether it be CD, vinyl, digital. You know, different music labels might have released this album in different countries. They're also, as I was discussing earlier, you know, you might want 20th anniversary, remaster it. So basically, it just starts to come to the question of what is the actual track that you want to tag within this larger world, which is quite challenging. But what we've kind of come up with as a metadata stopgap is establishing this thing called a single record ID. It might just sound like semantics, but it isn't. And it's basically acting as a recording group identifier, for similar recording. So basically when the BBC now on radio plays out a track, it's, you know, what could happen before is someone on Six Music play the track off one CD, someone else plays it on a compilation. If you didn't have a record ID, those would be considered two distinct things. Now we've figured out sort of a way to find a common record ID for both of those. In the future, what I think will be even, so that's the record ID. Missed my slide. In the future, what I think will also be really interesting, primarily for jazz and classical, is this notion of a work ID. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about, with Music Brains, about this in the past, but this is trying to establish what is a discrete work ID, and basically that's saying when there's some sort of artistic creation of significant, well, it doesn't have to be significant, an artistic creation, that essentially we can create an ID for that, not just for other recordings that are done by, say, a said band, but more recordings that are done by various artists. So naturally classical music, you know, Ludwig van's Fifth Symphony, that list is very long, but it's, you know, a really interesting way to basically discover other types of artists or renditions of something. I still think it's really important even for pop music. I mean, I remember as a kid, the way I was exposed to Stevie Wonder was by hearing Higher Ground from Red Hot Chili Peppers. So, you know, being introduced to another artist through a cover and using a work ID to help facilitate that kind of music discovery, I think is really important. It's not as utilitarian as the other ones, but culturally, maybe even more important. So that's pretty much it. But I thought maybe it might just be interesting to, before I finish, to just go over a couple of stats that we've had around Playlister thus far. I mean, the service only launched, we had a beta launch in October, officially launched it in November, and the stats I have here are only till February, so it's about 4 months. I think the fair to say the numbers are quite modest right now, if you think of internet numbers. But considering its early days, I think the stats are quite encouraging. So, you know, right now, there's sort of average weekly unique browsers, possibly people, that go to the Playlister service each week. And within that, basically, we can tell that, you know, an average visitor does visit once a week. So that's suggesting there is a core group of regular users here. Admittedly, if we're talking about sort of a product management thing, the cone, where the cone is the real mainstream or the wide end of the cone, and the narrow ones going more to musos or niche musicologists, it's much, much more at the tip of the cone right now, but it's still quite good. In terms of tracks remembered or, you know, added to personal playlists, by the end of February it was 3.3 million, which ain't bad. In terms of the consistently most popular touch points for the Playlister service, by far and away, the UK top 40 singles chart page that I showed you earlier does get the biggest just raw numbers weekly. And in terms of Radio 1, the homepage and their network playlist also is quite substantial. In terms of talent, Giles Peterson show on Six Music, Pete Tong on Radio 1, and Annie Mack on Radio 1. Those DJs, their shows have the highest number of people that add tracks per week. As you'll notice, they're sort of specialist shows, kind of evening things. So it's not really mainstream stuff right now. I should mention before, when I rolling back to the 3.3 million, what was kind of interesting, I mean, it wasn't a proper audit, but, you know, the number of tracks that were added, it wasn't just, you know, the typical long tail where, you know, most of the tracks added are just particular tracks time and time again. They're actually, the tail gets quite long and quite far, which I think is a good thing. And also with Annie, she's one of the few presenters that have a presenter playlist right now, and she's also has the most subscribers, for whatever that care to know. But you know, lastly, the only thing I would say right now with the BBC Playlister is that most of the touch points are primarily focused within BBC Radio right now. But we certainly want to, you know, have a desire to expand that into television. And it was sort of, it was interesting when we had our beta launch in October that one of the weeks, the most popular episode upon which people added tracks wasn't a radio show at all. It was Peaky Blinders on BBC Two, which is a period drama with a soundtrack composed mainly of Nick Cave songs, so people were curious about it. I don't know what was more impressive about it, the fact that people were adding it from the TV or the fact that they somehow figured out a way to add it, because it's really difficult to do that right now. you know, in this coming year, we'll certainly look at figuring out how to integrate sort of a playlist or button just into general iPlayer, video player, things to make it a lot easier to be able to remember that. But we're also having to figure out ways to get that metadata around tracks associated with programs, television programs, which aren't always added in. We're looking at ways of scraping subtitles and so forth. So we'll have to see, or as Zane Lowe says, watch this space. So that's it. Thank you very much. And now I'm bringing out the big guns, which is Nick Humphrey here. So if there's any technical stuff, I'll defer to my esteemed colleague.
Hi. Is this okay? That was really interesting, and I work for a classical label, so it's great to know that you're working with Radio 3. Mm-hmm. What I'd be really interested in knowing is, are you going to have a composer ID? It's something we're always dealing with in metadata. How do you identify the composer as opposed to the artists?
Well, we do have one.
Yeah, so we have the same identifier. So Music Brains basically has identifier for people and bands. So we already have composer pages. The thing that we've been not so good at and have been made a lot of progress in the past year on is identifying different roles for the music. So in the past, we've just had a single role for each piece of music, and it wasn't clear if they were the composer or the performer. We've got that flowing all the way through from the playout systems, where the presenters set it all out, all the way to the website now. So that's getting better, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you do go to those some of the episode pages, track lists for Radio 3 programs, you'll see they're a lot denser than those ones I showed there, so they actually are showing the different types of performers.
Hi, could you highlight the reasons that you've chosen to create a proprietary identifier for recordings and works rather than utilizing the existing international standards that exist in that space?
Name an international standard.
Well, the International Standard Recording Code, the International Standard Work Code, the International Standard Name Identifier, those all exist. They have some shortcomings in some respects, but at least interoperability with them would broaden the scope of what you can do with the service.
I'll take this one, shall I?
By the way, they can hear you from here too. You don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
I was very excited about ISRCs when I first came to the BBC. The more we looked into them, the more problematic we found them to be, that record labels would use, they would create new recording codes when it was actually the same recording. Even worse, occasionally they'd reuse the same ISRC for different recordings. It's also quite hard to get hold of them, so we've had a lot of problems with that. Music Brains has ISRC stored against them, so where we have matched to Music Brains, we can go back to an ISRC. So if we were to work with a partner who did use ISRCs, then we'd look at using that as a way of matching, definitely. Works are more interesting. We're still doing some work on that, so hopefully we'll be able to do better. We've also had problems that just the rights holders, or at least the rights holders' societies, are very guarded about their data. So the ways that we want to publish this information, and they don't want us to publish that information.
Not an entirely value-free question. I'm trying to solve those problems.
Yeah, sure.
Delighted to hear what you're saying and have it talk to you afterwards.
And sorry, the first part, the record ID thing, I think ideally we wouldn't have a special BBC identifier, but part of it is because it's opinion. We want to group them together, but it's opinion-based rather than fact-based.
Do you group the edited and the parental advisory version under one identifier, or are they separate?
It's opinion. So I think we do group them together. But
that could be interesting.
Yeah.
Before 9 o'clock, anyway.
Yes.
Hi, Hello. That was really interesting, but as owner of a small indie, we often find the playlist data is wrong, and we have no means of correcting or updating that, and the producers really don't like it if you ask them to fix it.
So the track lists on programmes?
Yeah, on the radio programme. Yeah, so they quite often have the label wrong, but they often have the wrong artist, the wrong track name, or it's missing completely. And the producers get quite upset if you ask them to fix it. And obviously we need to preserve those relationships with producers, because as a small label, that's how we get, you know, tracks played.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is we receive regular requests to correct information, and yeah, we're working with... Part of the problem is that the priority for the radio stations is to make great radio and to get it out and not have dead air. So unfortunately, metadata usually comes second. But it's definitely something that we're working very hard to improve, because basically a service like Playlister can't work without it. One of the reasons why we do partner with Music Brains is because anyone can edit it. So it's a very high quality data set, and if you spot something wrong with it, the record labels or artists can go in there and fix things.
I mean, we're very fastidious about Music Brains and metadata in general. What would be really helpful, just a suggestion, is that we could somehow submit a form with the correct link to the metadata on Music Brains, so that the correct thing, you know, they don't have to repopulate the data, they can just replace the link. And
yeah, that's a good idea.
Here. As far as these sort of interactions are concerned, we're very much interested in any label that would like to give us data. Please, give us data. We're very much interested in having it, so if you're interested in feeding this data to us so that we can then feed it correctly to the BBC, we'd love to have this conversation, so please come see me afterwards if you're interested in working with us on that.
Sasha and Nick, what are our reports for that? Okay, yeah, so as was apparent there, metadata is a hot topic.